Hello and welcome to the first episode of The Archers, a brand new podcast where we are going to talk about all things Taylor Swift. I am half of your hosts, Katie.
I'm the other half. This is Madison.
And we are super excited to be here with you recording right now.
We're so excited. We're also really nervous for our first episode, but we're going to get through this together, you guys. It's going to be so much fun.
Yes, we have been talking about making this podcast for the last 2 weeks or so.
I feel like we got it all pulled together so quickly.
So quickly. Yeah, we're recording this November 10th. So this is before Red comes out. So you guys are hearing this about 2 weeks after we recorded it. In a lot of ways, I'm jealous of you listeners.
Because I know, because whoever's listening has heard Red TV and the Vault Track and the short film and all of her other appearances.
I know. You in the future have seen her SNL performance.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I'm definitely jealous of you in the future. At least I hope I'm jealous. I hope that you have great news to report people in the future.
There's no way they don't.
Right? I mean, I just have to have faith in our Lord and Savior.
We have Taylor a Phoebe Swift. Vault track. Like, there's no way.
Yes. So I'm wondering if we want to jump right into the kind of Taylor Swift stuff that's happening. I kind of want to maybe save that for after we go over just a little bit about, you know, why we decided to start this, who we are. Yeah, but definitely put a pin in Phoebe Bridgers because she tweeted something today that I'm very interested to talk about. So we met online through the Gaylor Reddit.
Yeah, best subreddit. If you're not on there, get on there.
Absolutely. And that was probably about 3 months ago, I want to say.
Yeah, and I didn't know until a couple days ago that we had actually like kind of interacted before on Reddit. Like I had taken inspiration from one of your posts about Rebecca Harkness and made a TikTok about it. I just found that out a couple days ago and that's crazy.
Yeah. But we officially met through the Gaylor group, Gaylor that I run.
Yes.
Yeah. I hosted a discussion on Zoom about Miss Americana and you were one of like four people to come and it was amazing. Just so amazing.
It was so much fun. I remember when I joined that group, I was like, this is everything I ever wanted because I would have never had the balls to organize it, but someone did and I'm happy to be here. Like, and it was, we had such a good discussion about Miss Americana. And then last month, Katie held another one where we talked about all of her music videos and everyone got to like submit which ones they wanted to watch. And we all like picked them apart and we were on Zoom for like, what, like 2.5 hours just talking about these music videos. And there had to have been like 15 people coming in and out throughout that time. And it was so much fun to just like talk with Gaylors face to face like that.
Yeah. No, that was a dream come true in a lot of ways. Just all of us having the same sort of visceral responses to her videos, whether it was the hints of queerness in her videos or just like how powerful and intense her symbolism is and how it goes across videos. It's just the best. I just love talking to other like queer Taylor fans. It's
so validating too.
Oh yeah.
To see everyone had the same thoughts that I did, like watching those. And exactly. Katie's doing another Gaylor group, you guys, on the 13th. By the time you hear this, it will have already passed. I just realized that. But I'm sure she'll be doing another one after that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to be hosting them on the 13th of every month. Of course, December 13th will be her birthday.
And hopefully we'll be getting an album on her birthday. That's my theory. I have like a crack theory in my head that she's dropping something on her birthday, but I don't know anything.
I mean, I don't know anything either. So,
but I know I missed you.
Oh God. Okay. How many times a day do you finish someone's sentences with Taylor lyrics in your mind?
Too many. And a lot of the time it's to people that don't know anything about her. Or, so it if just goes right over their head. Yeah. Exactly. It goes right over their head. I just say it. They don't even know what I'm talking about. I probably just sound like I'm like blurting out or it's like a tick. I don't know. It's bad. It's not good.
So yeah, we met on the internet and it kind of quickly became apparent that we have a lot in common in general. I mean, I just love the theories that Madison was coming up with. And I feel like TikTok is really your canvas. And I just feel like you make such compelling TikToks about the most fascinating, obscure pieces of queer history and how they are being eerily echoed by Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, like all of those parallels to like this lost queer history is a lot more telling to me than anything else in her work or in her life. Like,
absolutely,
her queer themes are just so obvious when it comes to her references to like past queer artists and stuff. And yeah, the Connie Converse thing was like one of my favorite things I've ever looked into ever. I mean, regardless of Taylor Swift or whatever, the Connie Converse, like her history and her songwriting and everything, is truly just like one of those lost stories in queer history that I wish would be revived.
Absolutely. I mean, I just feel like Taylor in her concerts are really bringing to the forefront so many queer elders and queer ancestors and like shedding a light on them. And I'm just like so grateful that you are also doing that work that I really admire Taylor for.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if you aren't familiar with Madison's TikTok, obviously we'll probably mention it a bunch, but she's Groupon mom, and looking at her video on Connie Converse, just chef's kiss, truly an amazing piece of video. And like,
I wouldn't mind doing a whole episode on that.
I wouldn't either. Yeah, we have a lot of episodes planned, so don't sit tight. If you don't want to watch TikTok, just wait for our episode about it.
But yeah, Katie had reached out to me a few weeks ago over email, which I was like, wow, so official.
I'm old, so.
But it was nice because I was like, okay, she's serious. And she was just kind of like, I have this crazy idea. Like, I love your theories. And like, I do the groups. And like, I think it would be so fun if we did the podcast and talked about all this together. And blah, blah, blah. The way that you had described like what you wanted the podcast to be and the kinds of things you wanted to talk about was exactly aligned with what I would want. So why not just see how this goes?
Oh yeah, it really has felt super fated because yeah. I mean, what inspired that was discovering that you were born November 26th. Yeah. I was born November 28th, so both crazy. Sagittarians. Such a crazy coincidence, because Taylor of course is a December Sagittarius, but having someone so close to my own birthday, like, you know, we both have birthdays on Thanksgiving, like that felt-
yeah, the fact that we're both into astrology and we both read tarot too. Yes. Like outside of this Taylor Swift universe, like we just have a lot in common that yeah. seemed really fated. And the fact that Sagittarius season is just coming, like rolling around, and we're gonna drop it during Sag season, the timing couldn't have been better.
It really couldn't have. So that's a little background on why we're doing this in a more like personal sense, why we're doing this in a podcast sense, like why we're bringing this out into the world. I mean, personally, I have this deep yearning for content about Taylor's like queer identity and
a pining, if you will.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, as if like the number one reason why her music is so queer and gay is the pining yearning. I mean, that's just what I feel. And what I hear so many of the fellow gaylers and people in our community, what we're all pining for is like public recognition of this deep, ineffable thing that we all feel, but that is really only being expressed on these obscure kind of like internet forums.
These like corners of the internet, like the mm-hmm. hashtag Gaylor on TikTok or the Gaylor subreddit or mm-hmm. The L chat, you know, like all these places where queer people kind of congregate to talk about things that straight people don't want to hear about. But I totally agree. And I think that your Gaylor groups made me realize that there was a lot more discussion to be had outside of those spaces. And as much as I love those spaces and I will continue to be a part of all those spaces, bringing yeah. it out into a more like palatable form, like a podcast like this, I feel like will hopefully open the general public's eyes a little bit more, or like open up the conversation to more queer people is like our main goal. I at least for me, I don't really care about convincing straight people that her music is queer, but I care that queer people can recognize the queerness in her music if they want to and yeah. enjoy it the same way that straight people have all these years, you know?
That's exactly right. I hope that our podcast can be a way for people to really feel like deep validation of these
things. Yes. Exactly. Validation. Because we all hear it. We all listened to Mine, I think it is, where she says she pronouns. She is the best thing that's ever been mine. And we all screamed that at the top of our lungs as, you know, younger Swifties. And here we are now realizing that that was very real. So yeah, we're just going to be looking at like all of her songs and her persona through a queer lens, just as the general public looks at her through a very heterosexual lens. We're just going to do the opposite. Just talking mostly about her music and her art. So her music videos and her lyrics and her writing, everything like that, rather than what the mainstream media wants to talk about, which would be like her relationships and what she's doing. doing and her PR moves and all of that. I couldn't care less.
Exactly. I know that's kind of like going to be the disclaimer, I think. Like, we're not real. I'm not interested in who she has dated or who she is dating, or as Dumois wants to convince us, who she's married to, the idea that she's married or anything. Like, that is so far away from what queerness means to me. Queerness can exist and does exist and has existed in people, mm-hmm. regardless of who they're married to. Tell that to any lesbian who's been married to a man. Exactly. Queerness is real, and it's something inside of us and can't be like quantified by who the gender of who we've slept with.
Yeah. And as much as there is, you know, arguments to be had and evidence of her with women or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. like, we all have seen the timelines. We've all seen our theories about which songs about who and like this and yeah. that. And I'm not trying to sound like I'm way above the whole scene from all of that, but like,
no, certainly not. Anyone that I mean follows what we talk about on social media will see yeah. that we are not above that scene.
No, yeah, we love talking about her ships and stuff and digging, but I just don't think that's really what we want to do on this podcast. And I think Katie and I are on the same page about that. It's just really wanting to look at her queerness without it relating to who she's been with, because that is not how your queerness is defined at the end of the day.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything else? I feel like that really sums up why we've decided to do this.
Yeah, I think it does too. And of course, like I said, we both love tarot and astrology and all that. So we'll be throwing in our little takes on astrological perspectives, like connections to symbolism that we've seen in tarot, you know, stuff like that. We feel like Taylor's probably a witch on her own. So,
I mean, of all, like, how many Willow remixes were there that were like the dancing witch version, the witching hour version? I turn like frog's legs into potions version.
Literally.
I know, she is very witchy. I love that she's in her witch era right now.
It's amazing. The cloaks. Mm-hmm. I love it. This episode, we are going to be doing a little lyrical analysis of The Archers.
Our namesake.
Or not The Archers, the song The Archer.
We're the Archers.
Plural.
Yes, our namesake for The Archers podcast is, of course, her track 5 from her first owned album, yeah. Lover, the first album that she released after leaving Big Machine Records. Yeah, and her track 5 of Lover is The Archer.
And track 5, if you don't know, if you're not in the Swiftie universe, all of her track 5s on all of her albums, she has said, are her like very personal, emotional songs that she feels very connected to. So mm-hmm. whenever a new album comes out, it's a really big deal to see which one is track 5. And on Lover, it was The Archer. So that tells us that it's very personal to her and she has a very emotional connection to the song, and it shows in the lyrics, I would say.
I mean, The Archer is the song that I really credit with transforming my relationship with Taylor Swift.
I agree.
The fact that we named the podcast after The Archer, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, the Sagittarius connection. But even just beyond that, the song is so really like the epitome of my relationship with her. And yeah. how I feel about her music.
It totally is. And I remember when I first heard it, I just thought to myself, like, oh, this is the Taylor Swift that I loved when I was younger. This is the Taylor Swift. This is the writing that I fell in love with, you know, during Fearless, Speak Now, Red, all of that. I was like, she's still in there. I wasn't a huge fan during Reputation. So The Archer just totally reminded me of who she is as an artist. And honestly, as a person, it reminded me just how much she really has been the Archer and the Prey in her career. Mm-hmm. And that there's a lot to be said about that and a lot of context to be taken into all of her music, considering that she's been attacked all these years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's so funny. I love that you say that it brought you back to the Taylor you loved as a child, because I mean, you are 7 years younger than me, 8 years younger mm-hmm. than me. You're going yeah. to be 22, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to be 30 in just a few weeks.
She reaches so many audiences.
I know. So I didn't know Taylor as a child. and I really disliked her for most of my life because I never really was a fan of pop music as a teenager or young adult. You know, I was really living that like indie bitch life.
yeah.
And I really only knew what the mainstream media told me about her. So yep, when I heard The Archer in 2019 and I heard this song that like is really one of the songs that resonated with me more than like as much as like the songs that up until that point were in like my top five. Like I was like, why is a song by Taylor Swift, someone that I have at best not cared about and at worst like actively thought was a villain in Hollywood, how does this song resonate with me so much? And that really led me to completely unlearn everything that I had learned about her and open my eyes and heart to her like poetry and art.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And this makes me wonder, since we both had similar feelings listening to this song specifically, it makes me wonder how many other Swifties had the same experience where this song or at least this part of the album just kind of, I don't know, kind of transformed how we were looking at her and kind of gave us a new perspective on her, especially after all the chaos of her career, like prior to this, of Reputation and like the weird Lover rollout and just everything in that like 5-year gap. Yeah. I do wonder if other Swifties also felt that same way of like, oh, this is Taylor Swift. Let me unlearn everything else I thought.
And I mean, I love that it ended Miss Americana too.
Yes.
Like just that subtle fade out of like who she's become and having the Archer be the song that it's almost like we want this to be your, the like taste in your mouth when you're done with this movie is the Archer.
Yes. Oh, I love how you just put that. Yes.
The fact that it's her track 5 too, I mean, that to me says that like she knew that this song was transcending other
everything
songs
she was putting out. Yeah,
exactly. Like that this would be the encapsulation of the Lover album.
I would say that this song gives context to every other song on the album. I think this song predates all the other songs and gives like the audience some sort of ground to base everything else off of. So if you listen to this song first and then you hear a song like Cruel Summer, you know, and you hear about that like pain of like having to hide this relationship or whatever, it really it gives it context, it gives it more context.
I really can't add anything else. I just I love this song so much. So it feels like such a blessing and a privilege to be able to name our podcast after that.
I'm so glad that we found that this song had so much common ground between us.
Yeah, so just from a Sagittarius, on a more shallow reading of it, it being about like a Sagittarius anthem, I mean, I think that the fact that the song is so emotional and complex and kind of like unreadable, it's really one of those like if you know, you know songs.
Yeah, like because if you're sad, you know.
Yeah, and then meanwhile there's so many people that are like, I don't get the Archer, I don't understand.
I was just gonna say that I've seen more people say that they don't understand the Archer and that they don't get what it's about and this and that, and I'm like, oh, so you must not have any Sagittarius placements. Noted.
I know. It's just, it's like, the thing is, it's this song is about being seen as prey and being seen at like something that you need to tie down, something that you need to shoot down, like a wild thing that you're trying to capture, the prey. And this song
simultaneously is also being the thing that can hunt the prey. That's why everyone feels the need to tie it down.
Exactly. Like that is the essence of what it is like to be a Sagittarius. And it's also then all wrapped up with like all the queerness that's really dripping in this song, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, Sagittarius, let's quickly just go over her placements and our placements.
Yeah. Okay. So Katie, what is your big three first?
Okay. My big three. I have a Cancer rising. So Cancer ascendant is very watery, very motherly on the outside. My sun is of course Sagittarius, November 28th. I would say my sun comes out most, and my Sagittarius sun, like for people that know me, comes out most through that, the fact that I'm like gregarious. Like I really have the Jupiter energy of being, you know, like a hostess, etc. And I also tend to have that like sardonic sense of humor and can kind of seem like flippant almost at times when I have to like live more on the surface. Then finally, my moon is Virgo. I have a Virgo moon.
That's a tough one.
It is. Yes. It makes me, I literally think of it as like, there's just like a walnut as my core. That's like extremely hard to crack, but like a gushy center. Like when you actually do. My Virgo moon, like pretty much only my wife understands that part of me. And yeah, I just keep things really close. Very, very close.
I was thinking about your chart earlier before we started recording. And I was like, I can totally see the Cancer rising. I can totally see the Sag sun, but the Virgo moon really is that walnut, like very, it's mm-hmm. inside, it's internal, but it yeah. comes through with you're very good at organizing. Like the way that you emailed me about the podcast was your Virgo moon being like, okay, so I just came up with this idea.
Absolutely. And that everything was at that one, I'm thinking. And that I sent that email at 1:30 in the morning.
So I am a Sagittarius sun as well, of course, and I am a Cancer moon, which totally just, no wonder we have so many similarities. You're a Cancer rising, I'm a Cancer moon, and it makes me very, very sensitive. Taylor is also a Cancer moon.
The fact that you share 2 out of 3, so amazing.
It's pain. It's really, it's painful. That's why when I listen to her music, I feel it almost too much sometimes, and I'm like, oh, poor thing. And then I'm a Pisces rising, which makes me just absolutely batshit crazy. I feel unreadable at times and very mysterious. I change my moods every 2.5 days like the moon, and they're hidden like the Pisces that I am. Yeah. Taylor is a Scorpio rising. So that makes sense as to why she is a very polarizing figure to the public. Scorpio risings are known to have a very piercing effect in any space that they're in. So whether she's in a room or in the media, she has a very polarizing effect because people are afraid.
Scorpios are, I think, the most polarizing sign in the zodiac, I've found. Yeah, people have strong feelings over Scorpios in general.
And having that be your rising sign, like, mm-hmm. you know, they say your rising sign is what you're supposed to grow into in your lifetime. And as we've watched Taylor grow all these years, she's embracing this figure that everyone has made her into. You know, we kind of saw it first with Blank Space and then Reputation. And now she's just doing whatever the hell she wants with the re-recordings. And it's totally embracing that, like, yeah, I am polarizing, so I'm just going to keep being polarizing since everyone is going to say I am anyways. And that's also her rebellion of Sagittarius.
Yeah, my wife is a Scorpio, and so I'm like pretty familiar with the ins and outs of like what it means to be a Scorpio. And the thing that I admire most about them are their understanding of death, and I put quotes around death, like the
like transformation in general.
Well, that's the thing. It's like of things ending and of endings as inherently transformational and transformative. And like, I just admire that so much because, you know, Sagittarius is coming after Scorpio. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's such a close relationship to them, but it's almost as if like Sagittarius are so, they're in the phase right after the ending. Mm-hmm. If Scorpio's the ending, then Sagittarius's are kind of like
are the new beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like the leftover embers of a fire. Like if Scorpio was putting out the fire, Sagittarius would be the sign of the leftover embers catching flame again.
That makes sense. Exactly right. I mean, that is, I don't think you could say it better than that, especially considering Taylor's obsession with imagery of
rising
embers
from the dead
and of ashes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's exactly right. I mean, she's always living in that space between her ascendant of Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
And her son of Sagittarius. She's living in that, like the burst of the flame yeah. when it becomes ember.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I totally agree. It's crazy looking at her chart and how much it makes sense. It makes me like, I feel like if anyone needs convincing that astrology is real, just look at Taylor Swift's birth chart and her career. Like seriously, it's insane. And we will talk so much more about this on the podcast. I want to do like so
Absolutely.
Much with her birth chart.
Yeah, of course. It's just, we would be remiss to not mention her birth chart on an episode talking about the Archer, since she is an archer.
Exactly. So the Archer, of course, as we said, is track 5 on Lover, and the lyrics start out where she says, combat, I'm ready for combat. I say I don't want that, but what if I do?
It's so hard. God, I love this song so much.
I know. I wish we could just listen to it like on the pod. So the way that I see this song, and well, you can jump in at any point, of course. The combat part to me feels like combating homophobia and combating the struggle for her to come out without really coming out because the general public would not have a good reaction to her, a country music originated artist coming out.
Or, I mean, really like a femme beautiful woman coming out.
Yeah, in general. Yeah.
an object of attraction for men to come out.
And one of like the biggest punching bags for sluts in the media and the Absolutely. Whole idea of a slut, you know, like there was still yes. just on Netflix not very long ago, they mentioned Taylor Swift and all of her boyfriends. You know, it's like she's been this punching bag for misogyny and slut shaming. So not only would she be starting another war of all of her exes being brought up in the media, but also mm-hmm. the war of combating just straight up homophobia. And I also think that this could be talking about her team. I'm sure that her team did not want her to come out in a really big dramatic way. I couldn't see them encouraging that in any way. We see how strict they are in Miss Americana, and we can talk mm-hmm. about that more as we get through the song. But I do think that her team has a really big hand in either helping her not come out or keeping her in the closet unwillingly.
Absolutely. I mean, I say I don't want that. I say,
but what if like, I do?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, that already is putting the juxtaposition between how she acts and how she feels, you know, yes. what she says and what she thinks. Like, it's already coming out. Like the first punch of the song
yeah.
is I'm saying something, but what if I'm not telling you the truth?
Which is also that internal combat, that internal battle she's having. And that's so Sagittarius too. Like not even being able to acknowledge your feelings, running from them, kind mm-hmm. of just doing the exact opposite of what you feel you need to or want to.
As we've said before, people think Sagittarians love to travel, just to travel. But I mean, a lot of times Sagittarians are traveling as a form of running, like getting away from
something. It's a
coping
mechanism, babe.
Exactly.
I just want to note for anyone that isn't exactly a Swiftie, as we know, Taylor started in Tennessee in country music. Her father is someone who worked in the stock market as she grew up. So he knows how to market to an audience and he knows what the business side of things looks like. He's been heavily involved in her management along with her mom, of course, and just her whole family. So yeah, that's some good background to acknowledge as well, especially just, I'm not comparing Taylor's situation to Britney, but there are some parallels there of the families being involved from a very young age and kind of growing up knowing you were going to be a star, and they're both Sagittariuses and they both lack a lot of freedom in their career.
Yeah, I just think the fact that they're both child stars, child yeah. singers, like of course you have to compare them. Taylor Swift in a lot of ways has had an extremely different career than Britney Spears, like pretty much as far away from Britney Spears kind of brand of celebrity as you can get in the 21st century. But you have to compare the two because mm-hmm. they're both white, blonde, child stars.
Pop stars. So yeah, she built her whole fan base off of this Miss Americana persona, which she goes over so much in that documentary, just being this like kind of Southern belle. She's white, she's blonde, she's blue-eyed, she's the girl next door, poster child for America, and that whole vibe of like the early 2000s that everyone was kind of looking for. She was exactly it. Her brand was like super palatable. It still is for the most part, but it's always been very palatable. It's always like, even the job that I just got recently, on my first day, they were showing me how to play the music in the place, and my boss said, we always play Taylor Swift music video because it's a safe bet. Isn't that so interesting? And it just showed me, I was like, you're right. It is a safe bet because even though people hate her, she's not going to say anything too dirty in her song. She's not going to cuss in her songs. Any customer that comes in is going to, you know, be fine with Taylor Swift playing. Her music is everywhere you go, which just proves how.
Right. I mean, I am one of those Taylor Swift fans that whenever I hear Taylor Swift on, like in a public place, I'm like, my favorite indie artist is playing.
I'm like, oh my God, how do they know this song?
Exactly.
It's like a blank space. I'm like, oh my God, this song's so underground. Like, how did they...
I like need a reality check all the time that to the vast majority of the world, they still think of Taylor as I did a few years ago.
Yeah, I saw someone say today on Twitter that she's the most mainstream yet underground artist there is.
And
because everyone knows her, but yes. No one likes her.
I can't even.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's also just want to note, like a lot of the narratives that are built around her heterosexuality and her persona that people don't like is often built on by Swifties. like by her audience, just the way that they've built narratives around all of her songs and all of her albums, who they're about, the way that the media takes that and runs with it, regardless of if it's true. And it just kind of builds itself, the narratives around her and around who she's dating. So her possibly being queer would imply that she has been like lying and kind of like hiding the truth from her fans, which I understand why Swifties get frustrated with alternative theories about her songs sometimes, because I'm like, all these years you all have built these narratives around these songs and have these ideas in your head of who they're about and connect them to your real life accordingly. And if she were to come out, all of that would crumble. It would be a very confusing experience for Swifties to have to reinterpret the songs, as well as the general public. I mean, even the public knows, like, oh yeah, she wrote this song was when she was dating Jake Gyllenhaal, you know?
Yeah, even like middle-aged men know that.
Yeah, it's really strange. I didn't realize it until recently. And even if you go on her Genius pages for all of her songs, like all the descriptions have some sort of guess on who it's about. And it's so strange because there's no other artist that...
None. Absolutely none.
It's I can't think of a single one.
No, and it's so infuriating. She's worked so hard to get credit for her work and have like her be the one that is, you know, creating this artwork. Like, she's this incredible poet, incredible writer. Mm-hmm. And every single Genius page is just pap shots of her with different men.
Yeah. And it's like, well, oh, she wrote God. This in this time, so it must be about this person because they were seen around this time. And I get that she's doing it to herself in a way with like the pap walks and the PR and everything, but it's crazy how it snowballs. But all of this is to say that it would be combat for her to come out and for her to embrace her queerness in such a public and obvious way, for the general public to acknowledge. It would be combat, because think of all these things that she would have to defend and all these things she would have to explain.
Absolutely.
She also still markets her music and does promotions in places like Russia, where there are no laws protecting queer people. She just did a promotion in Russia about a month ago. So she's still very active in these countries where homophobia runs rampant. And that's another example of why she would not be able to come out.
She wouldn't be allowed in Russia. Like, let alone would she like not be like able to maybe like book tours anymore, like, or like have, you know, huge backing in Russia. It's more like she literally physically would not be allowed in the country if
they
she
would
was
ban
out.
Her ban any advertisements for her music, like everything.
Like, she cares about her fans so much. Why would she ever do that to her Russian fans?
And that point is one of the only points that makes me understand and empathize for why it doesn't come out, because I think it's notable for her to come out in such a way that only queer people understand, so that they can still enjoy her music and her tours and everything, even in places where they aren't really allowed to express themselves.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to give the audience an idea of how, because people always say if Taylor wanted to come out, she would. And it's not that easy for an artist like Taylor Swift, who is an international pop star. It's not like this is, you know, King Princess or Hayley Kiyoko. Love them both. They're in much different situations to be able to have queerness be a part of their brand. It's not the same for Taylor. So let me know what you think about this. But I think that in this song, They, when she says they, I think it refers a lot to her team and her management and just like the PR side of things, the business side of things that holds her back. I think it could also be referencing a queer love of hers too, but
yeah. So, okay. So there's a few different parts where she uses they as a pronoun. The one that I absolutely think is her team is when she says, at one point, does she say, they say I don't want that, but what if I do?
Yeah. 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 In one of the other verses. Yeah.
In one of the other verses that I'm like, absolutely. Like, her whole team is telling her like, you think you're prepared for the backlash, but you're not. Like, you don't want this backlash. But another part that she uses they that I think is so interesting is easy they come, easy they go.
Yes. And that's why I wanted to hear your thoughts, because that seems more like about love interest.
Love interests or fans, even like opportunities, like sponsorship.
Yeah.
It's like everything, every part of her life so far, it's like sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. I don't want to get too much into like when the song was written, her current relationship, whatever. But I mean, regardless of if she has a partner right now, and like who that partner is, there's so much loneliness in this song. It echoes so much the part in Miss Americana when she talks about, you know, winning the Grammy for 1989 and looking around and realizing that there's no one to really be by her side.
She said, I had my mom, but that's about it.
So like this song encapsulates that same loneliness to me. When she got that Grammy, everyone thought that she was with Calvin Harris.
Yeah. So like, it's interesting she said so straight up, like, I didn't have anyone.
So like, I just don't understand why so many of us are dead set on taking everything she says, or more importantly, everything the media says about her relationship at face value. And not even at face value, like, yes, take everything she says at face value, fine. But more importantly, like, don't take everything that you hear about her and be like, that's the word of God. That is the unbreakable, unknowable truth.
And then just to use it as a defense against her possibly being queer too. Not even exactly. Like, not even as like, I take everything she says, her word for it, whatever. But it seems that Swifties that have a problem with her potentially being queer and with people talking about it only want to take the things she said as truth when it's to defend her straightness.
But anyways, regardless of all that, this is so lonely. They, like, whoever they is, it's so other. It's so separate from her.
It's so lonely. And again, we keep talking about Miss Americana, but it's so relevant to this song because this was the time that, like, when the song was recorded was the time she was making Miss Americana. So there was a part, for anyone who doesn't know, again, just providing more context, Taylor is sobbing to her team and they're having a little meeting and she's begging her dad and all of her other management to allow her to make an Instagram post in support of the Democratic nominees in Tennessee. And that was in the 2018 election. This scene is heartbreaking. I didn't take it very seriously when it first came out. I was like, oh, white girl crying over her political stances. I don't feel bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the more context that I kind of learned just like about her and her queerness specifically and how I feel like that tied into her wanting so badly to speak out.
In the middle, like between the time I watched Miss Americana for the first time and when I watched Miss Americana for the second time, I had watched the Britney doc that came out.
Oh yeah.
The New York Times Britney doc. And like, I no longer think about celebrity culture the same way after I saw that doc. And then like after just like from what I know now about what it means to be a celebrity, like how many choices are people really making? Like
what is in their control?
Yes, what actually is? We truly could never know.
It's really scary. Her dad in this clip, it's a really interesting clip because her dad is sitting across the room with all of her team and then Taylor's like on one couch with her mom on the other side of the room and they're having this conversation. And her dad mentions, you know, you can't do this. I'm the guy that got armored cars to protect you and your safety. He expresses that him and the rest of the team, not just him, express their concern for her safety more than anything. It feels to me very manipulative. It felt almost like gaslighting. It felt like a scare tactic to make her fearful for her own safety so that she wouldn't have the urge to speak out on this issue or come out or whatever it may be. And I just want to note that because it's just, I think if you haven't seen the documentary and you're not like a full-time Swiftie like a lot of us are, when you don't have all the context, it just feels like a very silly little theory. But when you see these very real situations happening behind the scenes of her like just trying to have a little bit of freedom to speak on things outside of her brand, it's so complicated. And if they're showing us that in the documentary, it makes me wonder, because watching that, I was shocked that they even put that out and that her team allowed themselves to be seen like that in the documentary. So it makes me wonder what else is happening that isn't in the documentary and how much worse the control probably is around her. He also mentions, you know, this is a great tactic to cut your audience in half for the next tour. So another scare tactic, you know, you're going to lose all your fans if you do this.
I just think it's so painful, like as a, even separate from being a queer woman, like just as a woman, as like a femme, watching her team and her dad especially try to convince her that she should be scared and she should be fearful of how people might respond should she express herself. It's just so painful because, you know, it's like we really are, as white women, women told to prioritize like our safety and our well-being above like
speaking out on things that we have the privilege to speak out on,
about like goodness and what is right and any sort of justice. And it just breaks my heart that the world has to suffer the consequences of that, of like white mm-hmm. womanhood being so prioritized over the mm-hmm. well-being of people of color, queer people, trans people, like any people yeah. that aren't white women. It's like, it's just devastating. It's mm-hmm. violence, you know?
So basically her team to me feels like a huge reason for her questioning coming out. And a lot of this song to me sounds like her questioning if she'll be able to keep her audience if she does eventually come out.
Yeah,
like we were absolutely. Saying, they could be referring to fans as well. So in the next verse, she says, because cruelty wins in the movies. I've got 100 thrown out speeches I almost said to you.
100 thrown out speeches? Like, what does that mean if not in the context of a like intense monologue that she has tried, like a big thing, like a big admission that she's been trying to make that she hasn't been able to?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's obviously the coming out speech.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's clearly some sort of admission.
Yes. Like, what else? The phrase, the idea that you're writing speeches over and over and over again is because you're trying to confess something, whether you're trying to confess a like new political stance.
Something controversial, yeah. for sure.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I feel like there's so many scenes of coming out stories in like movies and film where you literally see someone writing a speech over and over and over again. It's a very yeah. popular trope for coming out.
Like figuring out the right words. How are you going to say this? Like totally.
What do you think about, because cruelty wins in the movies? I that line is so perplexing to me.
It totally is for me too, and it took me a minute to kind of like get my thoughts down on this, because I'm still not sure if these are actually my thoughts, but they're one of my interpretations of it, is that if she does see coming out as a combat like battle situation, then she's also saying that even if she loses these fans or like some of her audience in the process, she would be doing what's quote unquote right. And it would fit a victory or like a happy ending that you would see in a coming of age story, like in a movie. So even if it's cruel and she loses half of her audience to this battle, like if we really visualize it as like a gruesome battle of her coming out, then yes, yeah, she's going to have some casualties, but that's how you win in the movies. That's how you get the happy ending, is some people have to die for you to get your win. And mm-hmm. That's how I interpret that whole, because cruelty wins in the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I love that interpretation. And I mean, I think it says a lot about the trope of writing the speeches, like just referencing mm-hmm. movies and realizing that like she's in a like very cinematic part of her life, you know, really doing mm-hmm. something that like has been done by queer people many, many times before. So considering how alone she is in this, I feel like she also is very aware of some sort of like ancestral queer community and context for herself.
As we've seen, Taylor is very well versed in queer history and queer literature. She references it in, I mean, as early as Red, I would say she references queer things and queer themes. So like you were saying, that it's a common theme in like movies and stuff of people writing these speeches, trying to find the right words. She's totally acknowledging that here. She's like, yeah, I am just another one of those coming out stories, and I'm trying to figure out where my place is in doing this.
Just thinking of, because cruelty wins in the movies, that line always reminded me of the Brandi Carlile song, The Joke. Do you know that song at all?
I don't, but I've heard a lot about Brandi Carlile on the subreddit.
Okay, yes, because the way that I know Brandi Carlile in relation to Taylor Swift is in Brandi Carlile's most recent book. So she's a lesbian country folk singer.
Taylor definitely knows of her then.
Yes. I mean, she's very famous, I think. She's in the band The High Women with Maren Morris.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. That's tea.
Exactly. So anyhow, Brandi Carlile, lesbian country singer, has this really incredible song. Actually just realized is on like a Sagittarius playlist that I have. So very like similar vibes in general. It's the song The Joke by Brandi Carlile is essentially a song to like marginalized people. The chorus is, let them laugh while they can. Let them spin. Let them scatter in the wind. I have been to the movies. I've seen how it ends and the joke's on them.
Oh.
So basically being like, everyone that's cruel to you now, the joke's on them. And just referencing like the movie. And it's so funny because Brandi Carlile is saying in the movies, the good guy always wins. And Taylor's saying in the movies, cruelty always wins. Like, isn't that so interesting?
That is so really interesting.
Your theory of cruelty in this case being coming out.
Yeah, I see cruelty as almost how her team would look at it.
Exactly.
Of like, that would be cruel for you to lose half of your audience and to ruin your connection with half of your audience. And she's like, well, it wins in the movies, so it must be the right thing to do. And her obsession with being a good girl too, when you were talking about that and the movie and the good guy always wins, that's really interesting. The way it's very emphasized in Miss Americana that she has always been obsessed with being a good girl. It's very interesting. Noted though about Brandi Carlile, I really need to look into that more.
I really love The High Women with her and Maren Morris. So definitely start there because there's some great lesbian country songs on that as well.
Oh, I definitely will. Don't play with me. I love finding new queer artists. And of course, we see her mentioning battles too in New Romantic on 1989, where she says every day is like a battle. She talks about bricks getting thrown at her. It's very Stonewall.
New Romantics is in my like top three favorite Taylor songs. I love that song so much. It's like the origination of the castle metaphor and like the kingdom metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, that's really like wrapped up in Call It What You Want.
Yeah. And like all of Reputation. Like,
yes, exactly. So I love the connection to cruelty winning in the movies.
Yeah. She, it's just another one of those examples of her thinking or feeling like every day is a battle because she has to constantly hide this part of her and battle wanting to come out.
And then of course we have like up next in the next verse, easy they come, easy they go. I jump from the train. I ride off alone. Oh, God, ouch. I love her train metaphors so much.
Mm-hmm.
And the train, I mean, in her other music has always represented, I thought, like, you know, relationships, like intimate relationships. So, like, in that sense, like, easy they come, easy they go could be like romantic partners. Considering this song, I would say that my instincts of like easy they come, easy they go being more about just the ups and downs of life in general, it would make sense that trains for her and relationships for her do work a little bit more like eras in her mind and like bookmarks in her mind of certain times. So like the train might just be some goal and period of her life that she has to transition out of, so she jumps out of it. And then riding off alone, I never grew up, it's getting so old, help me hold on to you. I think that part
is very sad.
God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because there certainly is a like naivety in Sagittarians.
And it's that optimism that we have. We kind of, it comes from a very like inner child kind of place.
Yeah. And I loved in Miss Americana when she talks about that saying that they have, that people have, that when you become famous, that's the age you stop at. So if you become a child star, you're going to be perpetually like 9 years old for the rest of your life. And Taylor was like, I think that's true. And I have like 12 years of catching up to do. So I just like, I love that, that she had the self-awareness to really try to work on that. You know, I think part of that for her is like, okay, I can't use the same, I can't hide in the closet like I've been doing since I was a teenager, since I like first realized that I was queer. Because most of us, you know, realize that we're queer at different times in our life, of course, depending on like compulsory heterosexuality or, you know, like just straight up denial. Exactly. Yeah. Like, obviously it's different, but I mean, puberty is a pretty common time when we start to like realize, oh, you know, maybe I don't feel the same way about like boys or girls that I'm supposed to.
And it also makes me think about, I believe the term is second adolescence that people use in reference to queerness, and how kind of in the same way of people describe when you get frozen at the age that you become famous, you also kind of, you backtrack when you come out as queer and when you start actually embracing your queerness, I think. especially when you kind of realize it when you're a little bit older than puberty. And
absolutely,
it's like you have to relearn all of your relationship dynamics and relearn how to love people and how to embrace who you are and like this new person. And it's like a second puberty, second adolescence. And it makes me think of that too, as well as all of her Peter Pan references in all of her music. This is just another one of them. Like in Cardigan, she says, tried to change the ending, Peter losing Wendy. She never grows up. And this line was probably the one that hit me the hardest when I first heard the song, and where I was like, oh, she's raw. Like this song is raw. The self-awareness that's there just shows that she's in a lot of pain. Like she's acknowledging that it's self-induced in some ways too. And what do you think about the help me hold on to you line?
It's like it always just has seemed like just reminiscent of like drowning. Like I just picture it as like kind of the ultimate cry for help. Like, help me. Like, I am so lost. I'm so at sea that I can't even trust myself to hold on to you. Like, yeah. Like,
help, like I need me. You to hold on to me.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. what help me hold on to you means. Like, just basically like, I'm so alone. I am so used to being alone. I only know how to live alone, that if we're going to have a chance, I need you to help me.
When you said that, I never thought of that visual of her like kind of in water, but it reminds me of, I believe it's the Cardigan video where she's holding onto her piano and she's
absolutely
like at waves, like at sea, and she's like desperately holding onto the piano and her music. I think it could be holding onto her fans, like help me hold on to my audience and my fans, regardless of me going through this like transition of me trying to come out. Possibly also maybe her partners, as you said, like jumping off from the train could represent like leaving these relationships when it gets too serious, because it's just not realistic. Exactly. And so it's like, help me hold on to you, help me make this work, even though I can't hold on, can you hold on to me? Like, at least. She says, I've been the archer, I've been the prey, who could ever leave me, darling? But who could stay?
For those who don't know, Sagittarius is the archer. Specifically what it is, it's a centaur. So a centaur holding a bow and arrow. And what a centaur is a half horse, half human. So literally a combination of archer and prey. So we have humans who hunt animals, and then we have animals who are hunted. Existing in that one symbol. And then of course, you know, to even make it more so, the human half, the upper half that has arms and the ability to hold the weapon, is actively holding the weapon. So just that weakness and that strength existing in one body and one presence is really what it's like to be a Sagittarian, because people are always kind of resenting you for, or I won't say people in general, but like there's a resentment towards Sagittarians for being so carefree, optimistic, and very free and wild feeling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to actually live as a Sagittarian, it's the reason why we come across as those things is because we are like traumatized from like just how we process the trauma that it all human beings experience, because to be human is to experience trauma. And the way that Sagittarians process it is by being jovial, charismatic, the life of the party, a perfect hostess, and
holding on to that inner child,
clutching that inner child, holding on to that naivety. And then all of those things are then paired with a, you know, deep fear of anyone really knowing us, of anyone getting close to us, of not being alone. Like, to be a Sagittarian is to be simultaneously surrounded by people and to be alone. And that's what this song is about. It's about being hunted and the hunter, and the very tragic reality of living in that.
Like you said, the Sagittarius is that like half animal, half human, and the only zodiac sign with a weapon. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones that have to fight back and that are equipped to fight back.
Equipped to fight back, exactly.
Yeah. And it's because there is something threatening about us being able to do both. We're the only sign that has human and animal features in the archetype. So of course mm-hmm. that's threatening to the rest of the zodiac. I mean, I would be scared too. But that's why we have a bow and arrow, you know, and we think of these like public Sagittariuses, like Britney Spears, Miley Cyrus, Nicki Minaj, all very outspoken women in their careers. Miley Cyrus has had so many phases in her career of mm-hmm. being like hated and ostracized, but then also being one of the most well-known pop stars alongside Taylor, you know, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And who could ever leave me, darling, but who could stay? That to me is so just isn't that just like the sweetest little like fishing mm-hmm. for compliments, self-deprecating,
yeah,
like just so good. It just really sums it up. Like we think so highly of ourselves, and then
like who could ever leave me, but yes. because of that and because I think like that, who would even want to stay?
Exactly.
Easy they That's... come, easy they go.
It's a hard life, but someone has to live it.
I think the who could ever leave me, darling, and who could stay line is just so representative of like Sagittarians being a walking contradiction. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, we are these free spirited people, but we're also terrified and on mm-hmm. the defense at any point and are not afraid to jump from the train and ride off alone if we have to. And that is intimidating and people don't want to stay with someone like that, especially if you're queer hiding in the closet and you have this big public persona, everything you do is watched so closely. I mean, who would ever want to stay in that situation? Got to find someone that wants to stay in the closet with you, basically.
Exactly. Dark side. I search for your dark side. But what if I'm all right, right here?
I think this is also in Sagittarian nature. Despite us being so optimistic, we're very critical, and it's definitely her kind of looking for a reason to jump from the train. She's like, it's a lot easier to leave and run as Sagittarius is, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to run from our problems than to stay and deal with them. So let me look for a reason to run. Let me look for a reason to ruin this so that it doesn't get ruined by something else.
I mean, yeah, I really can't say it better than that. And then just that echoing, but what if I'm all right here? Like that begging. She's begging. It's like, even though she's not actually begging through these lines, the repetition of just asking this person to like validate them, it's like, mm-hmm. I know I'm trying to tear you apart. I know I'm trying to like convince myself that this isn't right, but like, please, like she's begging, please tell me that I am safe and that I can do this. It's the mm-hmm. same thing. It's help me hold on to you. Like, help me not destroy this.
Yeah. It's all just anxiety. Like that whole verse is just like what I feel like anyone with anxiety can relate to, having those thoughts of like, I have to find my fears and find everything that I'm afraid of and how it's probably true. And
anxiety is not just in Sagittarians, sadly.
No, it is not. We definitely experience anxiety and we'll just book a trip to cope with it though, instead exactly. of like meditating or doing something normal.
Yeah, exactly.
The next verse she says, and I cut off my nose just to spite my face, then I hate my reflection for years and years. I think it's like a symbolism for her, like hiding her queerness. She's hiding a part of herself. She's cutting mm-hmm. off this whole part of herself and hurting herself in the process.
Cutting off your nose, like, is just such a, it's like she's breaking down. I mean, like her face is her brand. So mm-hmm. like to cut off her nose and like to, you know, destroy this image of her and how people see her just because she's grown to hate it. It's mm-hmm. like, I feel like she is really stuck between actually determining what aspect of her legacy and her brand as mm-hmm. Taylor Swift, figuring out what parts of it she likes and values and wants to treasure, and what parts of it have not only not served her or don't serve her anymore, but like what parts of herself and how she's seen have actively stunted her. Yeah. And then hating the reflection. I just feel like she really is struggling to figure out what is true and what is out of like the spite and just the revenge that I think the album before this song, you know, Lover, the album before it, Reputation, that was like such a vendetta of an album, right. And like contained so much talk of like revenge. I feel like she, after she had her Reputation era, really had to be like, okay, how much of that was real and based in real things, and how much of it was because I was really angry and wanted to blow everything up?
Yeah. And I think she said before that during her Reputation era, she did feel like she was playing a character and it didn't feel like herself. And I, that's a really great point. And I do think that that is the part of the career or her career that she's referencing. And I like how you said too, kind of like her legacy, what she's wanting to leave behind. Like,
yeah,
she cut off this part of herself and like left it. And it's not a part of her legacy now, at least not officially to people outside of Gaylor. It causes her to just like have that regret of like, why did I do all of that? And why did I play this character? Why did I act like a completely different identity than I am?
Yeah. So next it's, I wake in the night. I pace like a ghost. The room is on fire, invisible smoke, and all of my heroes die alone. Help me hold on to you. Oh, I just love how she uses fire imagery. I mean, it doesn't hurt that Sagittarius is a fire sign. So already like the song is so fiery and then it bursts into flame at this point. And then just invisible smoke. If the room is on fire, like, and she knows that everything's burning to the ground, but she can't actually see the evidence of it anywhere. Just
it's like the fire's not real.
Yes. Because
the smoke isn't real, then the fire must not be real. But the fire is real because she feels it. She feels the fire. She can't see it.
And the fire, like, the fire already killed her because she's a ghost.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just, it's like psychological torture that she's going through, like trying to figure out how to be real, how to throw away what doesn't serve her and to hold on to what is true and real inside of her and to find that space. And then like finally, you know, it's like she's going through this torture and then she just says to herself like, well, all my heroes die alone. Like, it's like she is telling herself over and over again that being alone is the only way that she is going to get through this. And then that same echo, help me hold on to you. I want to be all alone. I want to never share my true self. Like, help me. I'm drowning.
And this whole line, like this whole verse, I mean, sounds like anxiety ridden thoughts of like racing thoughts in the middle of the night. Like this visual that she gives of her waking in the middle of the night, walking around her room, pacing because she's anxious and feeling like she's on fire. And she's like, I'm going to die all alone, just like all of my heroes that came before me. I want to note that a lot of her heroes are queer. A lot of the people she's noted being inspirations to her are queer or queer adjacent, loved by the queer community. And it would make sense if she is in the closet that she would die all alone if she stayed in the closet, or she would at least die all alone to the public eye.
Yeah, exactly.
She does have a Cancer moon, as I said, which makes her probably a lot of a insomniac like myself. Hers is in her eighth house, which is terrifying, and it makes sense why she makes sense why she's very intuitive. She's very connected to the other side. She is always up late, which we see in her song. She talks about 2 a.m. on every album. She's always up in the middle of the night. She's always coming up with song ideas in the middle of the night. She's said before that she's woken up from her sleep to sing melodies into her voice memos on her phone to remember them because she heard them in her sleep, in her dreams. I would totally credit that to her Cancer moon being in the eighth house. But yeah, all of this is just, it's all anxiety. Her fears aren't even necessarily real because it's not like she's come out at all, but she's just anticipating it and questioning when, if she does, what it's going to look like. And just that and alone is enough to keep her up at night, even though she hasn't acted. Another fun note I found while I was kind of just like coming up with my analysis for this song: Taylor had a childhood heroes party at for New Year's. I don't remember what year. I think it was 2016. And she asked everyone to dress as their childhood hero. I thought that was a Halloween party because that's what it looks like, but it wasn't. She dressed as Ariel, the Little Mermaid. And the original story of the Little Mermaid, Ariel loses the prince and dies alone in the sea and turns into seafoam. And so the original story, the fairy tale, was written by this Danish author, Hans Christian Andersen, in 1837. And this quote that I took from a page about it being queer said, it was a love letter for a man named Edward Colin, and Andersen was believed to be bisexual and crushing on Colin, and wrote this story as an inspiration for his feelings for another man. Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting. And I didn't know this, but The Little Mermaid is very well known as a queer allegory. So if we think of, if we associate, I don't know if this was her intention, but if we do associate All of My Heroes Died All Alone with her dressing as Ariel, a mermaid who died all alone, a half human, half animal, might I add.
Yeah, just like the centaur. Yeah.
It seems like a weird coincidence, but maybe it was intentional. I don't know. Either way, it's very telling of just her whole anxiety surrounding coming out.
I love the Ariel connection. Mermaids are basically the centaurs of the sea. So I've definitely always connected with mermaids as a Sagittarius.
Me too. And I was going to say that. I was going to say I've always thought of Ariel as a Sag. And her voice being her weapon.
Exactly.
Similar to Taylor.
I feel like she has to be referencing the original Seafoam ending, mm-hmm. because literally, like, the Archer is about how she can't actually express herself. And she is, it's like she made this deal that she would get her dream, aka becoming a famous musician, and it trading for becoming a famous musician. She can't actually be herself or speak what she actually wants to do, whether that's politically or, you know, her deepest desires and identity. Ariel is her hero, but she also died all alone.
And I think it's telling that she had that little party, I believe, right after or right before Lover was. It was either right before Lover was released or right after. Y'all can fact check me, but it's a very specific theme for a party, childhood heroes for a New Year's party.
For a New Year's party. That is so strange. Yeah, I'm really interested to know what year that was.
So then she goes into again, I've been the archer, I've been the prey. This time she's screaming, who could ever leave me, darling, but who could stay?
Yeah, that of course reminds me of In My Tears Ricochet off of Folklore, which is another track 5. Yeah, because that's And I Still Talk to You When I'm Screaming at the Sky.
And it's interesting in that line too. She's screaming at the sky. Like she has no one to talk to about this. She has nowhere to take her frustrations out. It's all left on her shoulders. There's no way she could ever publicly talk about any of this, or even probably to friends and stuff. She doesn't have, no one can relate to that. Like she said, you know, once you reach it to the top of the mountain and you're all alone, like then what? No one understands what she's going through more than her. Hence why she can only scream it at the sky. So then of course we have like the crazy bridge, I guess, where she says, because they see right through me. They see right through me. They see right through. Can you see right through me? They see right through me. I see right through me. She says this over and over and over, all these lines. Just more of this like anxiety.
Yeah. And then going right into the like nursery rhyme, like the Humpty Dumpty nursery rhyme. All the king's horses, all the king's men couldn't put me together again because all of my enemies started out friends. Help me hold on to you. Like that whole bridge from They See Right Through Me to the nursery rhyme, it has such big Lady Macbeth energy, like going off the deep end, screaming into nothingness, like just... It's so unhinged.
Yes, it's visual of her like ripping at her clothes off and like just tearing everything to the curtains, lighting everything on fire, like just so unhinged. Yeah.
And to go into the nursery rhyme, all the king's horses, all the king's men couldn't put me together again. Like that is just so out of left field that so many of the connections that different fans and like different galers have put forth as to the connections of that have like really transformed how I saw the end of this.
Yeah, it's definitely So, of course, it's a reference to Humpty Dumpty. It's mm-hmm. also a reference to Dusty Springfield, which I think you and I talked about.
One of the most exciting things.
Yeah. So Springfield has an album called Reputation Rarities, first of all. Let's just put that out there. Sounds very familiar. In one of her songs, she says, "All the king's horses, all the king's men, you'll never get me back together again because I just fall apart each time I look at you. All the king's horses, all the king's men are never going to make me smile again," which sounds just like the gayest thing I've ever heard in my life. I don't have an explanation for that. I think you all understand where I'm coming from.
For sure. And it was only like in the last week when I read this theory that someone had come up with comparing it to Dusty Springfield, comparing the Archer to Dusty Springfield. It was only that week that I found out that Dusty Springfield is a lesbian. And I
Which makes it even better.
Oh, it makes it so much better. I am obsessed with Dusty Springfield. Like, I love her music. I have so many of her records and like have loved her since high school. I have to tell you, my sexual awakening was hearing her version of Son of a Preacher Man. Like, I love that song. Is like, to this day, I think like the sexiest song in the entire world. It's insane. Whoa. You should all listen to it right now. But I love Dusty Springfield. So finding out this week that she's gay and that Taylor references her song in The Archer, I was like, how incredibly lucky I am that all of my favorite things came together.
That's like the best crossover episode ever. And there's a Vice article about her being gay, and they say, this is a quote from the Vice article, that it was an open secret to the gay community, but her being a lesbian is not common knowledge in the general public today. So like, how you're a fan of her and you didn't even know.
Yeah.
But it was this open secret in the community, which sounds really familiar to me. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Very interesting. And I love this. This is one of my favorite Gaylor evidences, I think. This whole King's Horses, King's Men, the reference with Dusty Springfield, all of it. Even the lyric on its own sounds gay. But yeah, then she just goes into, "I've been the archer, I've been the prey. Who could ever leave me? Who could stay?" She continues to say, "I see right through me. Who could stay?" And then she ends it with, "You could stay." And again, she says, "Combat, I'm ready for combat."
We just went over this whole song. The whole time I've been like, she's so lonely. She is so alone. She's so desperate. She doesn't know how to hold on. And then in the final lines, she switches it. And it's like, actually, what if it's not about me staying? Like, what if it's not about like me pushing people away? What if like actually you are the ones that have to make the conscious choice and it's not all about me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could stay. Yeah. You can hold on to me.
Exactly. Like, maybe instead of just helping me hold on to you, you could just hold on to me.
Hold on to me. No, exactly. Like, why do I have to hold on to you? No, yeah, it is such a turn. It is, because this song is devastating and it gets more and more like doomed as it goes on, and like more and more like catastrophic. It reminds me of this very specific scene in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where there's like cars falling from the sky, and it's like
right when everything is about to exactly.
Yeah. And everything's like crumbling down. That's really it. I'm sure there's a lot of other scenes, but this is the first one I'm thinking of that it reminds me of. But like, it's catastrophic, this whole song. And then at the end, it's just like, "I'm ready for combat. You could stay." Period.
Oh, and I love when she ends her song on the opening lines. She does it for a lot of her songs, especially on Lover. She does it for Cornelia Street. Oh, it's just so good when she ends it in like a little perfect circle.
Yes, I was going to say full circle. It's so good. It's so satisfying. Even if we don't really get an ending to this story or what the hell she's talking about, like context-wise.
Well, she doesn't get an ending, so why should we?
Exactly. Great point, Katie. Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Like, you're so right. Oh my God. What a whirlwind, huh? Getting through that song. I feel like at one point we both were about to cry, like have a mental breakdown a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, I love that song so much. And I feel like, okay, what does it mean for us to be the archers going forward? Like, I feel like it's very tongue in cheek, because Swifties that are adamant about Taylor Swift's heterosexuality, AKA Hetlers, to our Gaylors. Yeah. Hetlers really do see Gaylors as combative, cruel, and like trying to target their like beautiful heterosexual princess. And so like the fact that we're naming our podcast The Archers, I feel like is really like good for us to like really
we're ready for combat. We have weapons. Like we are the only zodiac with weapons, babe. Come for
That's
it. Like I don't care. I love this song so much and I couldn't think of a better freaking name for our podcast. Like I genuinely I thought about it and I was like there's not another name that I would ever even consider. Because of what you said, we really are like, this is kind of combat, you know, like, I hate to say it, but Gaelers are soldiers, like, God gives their toughest battles to their bravest soldiers, like, not just you and I making this podcast, like, we're on the front lines with this podcast for sure, but like, we get attacked for talking about queer themes. And even when you've said it before that I'm very careful on my TikTok about towing the line and not assuming her sexuality or not pushing any labels onto her, because I don't even have a label for myself. Why would I do that? There are hetlers that come for me still, even when I'm so careful about what I say. And
I know
it's always going to happen because it's fueled by homophobia. And that's just it.
That's just it. So yeah, it's a war. It's a goddamn blaze in the dark.
And Taylor started it. Sorry. That's what I always say when I don't respond to Hitlers often. But when I do, I'm like, take it up with Taylor. I didn't write the gay lyrics.
I feel like that is that. That is the conclusion of the first episode of The Archers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really hope that everyone feels like they learned something. Or if you didn't learn anything, what I really hope you feel is validated, heard, and loved and held close. Because yeah, we really are right there with you.
I have a lot of people that want to listen to this podcast that I know in real life that don't know anything about Gaelor antics or don't consider her queer at all. So I'm hoping that there's also people that are listening with an open mind and that are hoping to get like context to why we talk about Gaelor so much. And yeah, I don't know, maybe we'll get some new Gaelor soldiers recruited.
Soldiers. Yes, I do want to do a disclaimer. I am against the military industrial complex, but soldiers as a metaphor, I think it's great. I'm glad people you know in real life will be listening to this, because people I know in real life will be listening to this.
Well, hey,
it's time we come out of the closet as Gaelors.
No, yeah, step into the daylight and let it go.
Oh,
Oh, do we want to talk about what we're doing next episode?
Yes. So next episode, it will be recorded after Red Taylor's Version comes out. Red Taylor's Version, of course, comes out November 12th at midnight Eastern. Yeah.
That's tomorrow night.
That is tomorrow night. Yes. And we will be talking next episode about Red Vault Tracks and the All Too Well music video / short film.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And I'm most excited for the Phoebe Vault Track. But
oh, yes, let's go back full circle to end this. So
oh, yeah. What was Phoebe's tweet?
Okay, so Phoebe, I realized, didn't actually tweet this, but it was a tweet about her. She said, quote, that she almost cried singing her part in the song for Taylor, and that she hopes people will take the song at face value when they hear it.
What does that fucking mean?
I'm so scared. It's gonna be very hard to not listen to that first. Yes, my wife and I, Lizzie, fellow Gaelor, she and I have decided to listen to it in order. First, we're going to watch the short film. Then we will listen to the album in order. It will be very hard to not skip ahead to the vault tracks.
Wow, you're so brave. I'm not doing that. I'm doing short film and then I'm starting at the first vault track and then going from there.
Due to the powers of time zones, I'm jealous that you technically get it November 11th.
Yeah, technically. And not so late either. Like, I could probably be done with it by like 1 and knock out.
Okay, well, great for you.
Okay, you guys. So we will discuss Red TV on the next episode. Thank you all for joining us for this journey. It's going to be so much fun. Share with anyone that you want to convince, honestly.
And yeah, thank you all so much. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Woo!
We did it. Oh my God.